Now, our next guest says the widespread destruction of our forests has stark similarities to the coronavirus pandemic. That's because trees are dying from invasive species and diseases that spread as people travel and transport things around the globe. Gabriel Popkin is an independent journalist. He writes about science and the environment. He also spent some time here at UW-Madison. Popkin's recent piece in the New York Times is called Invasive Insects and Diseases Are Killing Our Forests. He spoke with WPR host Keely Boltina this spring.
The ways plagues make trees sick and make people sick are different. Can you help us understand how that works, why they're different?
That's a great question. Obviously, humans and trees are very different. We breathe in oxygen. We have lungs. So that seems to be how COVID-19, which is, I know, on everybody's mind, that's how it gets to us. Trees are different, but they definitely still have plagues. And these plagues can be caused by a variety of different kinds of organisms, anything from fungi to insects to even these things called water molds.
And yet, you're clear that you see parallels between the insects and the diseases that spread among trees and the contagious diseases that we deal with as human beings. So how are they similar?
Both humans and trees, we sort of live in an environment with a lot of different things that are always trying to attack us. Like there are all these cold viruses and flu viruses floating around. Sometimes we get sick, but you know, our immune systems are pretty good at handling those things. Similarly, trees have to deal with all kinds of things, fungi, bacteria, insects trying to eat them, attack them. And trees have an immune system. It doesn't exactly work like ours. Trees can produce hundreds of different chemical compounds that help them defend themselves against disease and insects. And that's why, you know, you might have a tree that gets attacked. Sometimes you'll even see trees get defoliated, but they just come back the next year because they can handle the usual sorts of organisms in their environment. But when either humans or trees, encounter an organism that's very different from anything we've ever seen, that's when real problems can occur. Trees, let's say trees that live in North America, they have not seen insects or pathogens that might live in Europe or Asia because these continents have been separated for millions of years. And trees in that time have evolutionarily diverged, and each species has its sort of own set of organisms that attack it or feed on it. So when one of these organisms is transported to a new continent, it finds all these trees that have had no opportunity to evolve defenses. This didn't really happen very much before 1492 because fungi, insects can't really cross oceans on their own very often. But once humans started crossing oceans, they took organisms with them. And this includes both kind of accidental introductions and also intentional introductions. As soon as that started happening, that's when trees on different continents started meeting new diseases and new insects that often they had absolutely no defenses against. Columbus himself did intentionally bring livestock and I think certain plants from Europe to the New World, or what they call the New World. But as far as I'm aware, the first major tree plague outbreak occurred in the early 1900s, which was chestnut blight. So even though species were being transported across oceans for a long time, the sort of level of global trade that we see today is a more recent phenomenon where you really just have huge numbers of ships transporting things from continent to continent, you know, including people intentionally import plants. Like they say, hey, Japan has some nice hemlock trees, or, Europe has this different kind of chestnut tree. Like, let's bring it over here so we can put it in our gardens. And that's plant trade is what, you know, started the introduction of these forest pests. Mm-hmm.
We're learning from Gabriel Popkin. He's a journalist who focuses on science and society, and we're talking about threats to America's forest. This is the Ideas Network. And Gabriel, you brought up hemlocks. In the early 1950s, scientists found this insect from Japan that threatened American hemlock trees. What happened?
From what I've read, this insect was first discovered in a botanical garden in the Richmond, Virginia area in the early 1950s. But people think it actually was there probably for several decades before that. And these botanical gardens, you know, sort of owned by wealthy people, these folks really wanted plants from all around the world. This was a really popular thing to do in the sort of late 1800s, early 1900s, was to go around the world and collect plants, bring them to the U.S., grow them. It was sort of a status symbol. I think it was part of, you could say, part of American imperialism as well. And nobody thought about the consequences. So with hemlocks, these hemlocks were imported, I believe, from Japan. They grew probably in a benign-seeming way. And then this insect was discovered, but nobody knew what it was. Even after it was discovered, nobody really took action until sometime around in the 1970s, maybe 80s, when suddenly people started seeing hemlocks dying. So that's when the alarms were sounded. But by that time, this insect is all over the landscape. It spreads by, you know, birds can spread it, wind can spread it. There's just, at that point, there was no stopping it. It was way too far gone for anyone to put the genie back in the bottle, so to speak.
Is this a problem in Wisconsin?
Not yet. The last I heard, the hemlock woolly adelgid had not been detected in Wisconsin. Now, it certainly could be a problem because Wisconsin has a lot of hemlock trees. Hemlock loves cool, shady, moist areas, and northern Wisconsin in particular has a lot of those. If you go up to the North Woods, there's hemlock everywhere. The Menominee Reservation in northern Wisconsin, the Menominee tribe are globally recognized for their forest management. And one thing they do is that they really keep hemlock on the landscape. So there's a lot of reasons to be worried about the hemlock woolly adelgid. The good news for Wisconsin is that Wisconsin has cold winters, and it seems that the adelgid can't really survive below about negative 40. So as long as winters keep getting down to that temperature, that should really keep the adelgid at bay. But climate change is warming up winters very rapidly, and the warmer winters get, the less protection there is against hemlock woolly adelgid. And the other thing I would note is that the adelgid has recently been detected in Michigan, right across Lake Michigan. So it's, you know, not hard to imagine the adelgid hopping over the lake somehow or another and landing in Wisconsin.
And you just mentioned the issue of climate. Invasive species and diseases, when they kill trees, they actually contribute to our warming climate, right?
That's correct. The hemlock woolly adelgid is absolutely deadly. The hemlock species we have in the eastern U.S. really have no defenses against the adelgid. And so as soon as those trees are dead, they start decomposing. And when trees decompose, a large fraction of the carbon that is stored in bark, in wood, in roots, and so on, will end up in the atmosphere. Now, I think it's important to note that this doesn't happen overnight. I often go hiking in Shenandoah National Park, and I see, you know, large hemlock stumps, or I mean, whole trees even, that have probably been dead for 30 years and are still standing or lying on the ground or lying across streams. So it's not like a forest fire where all that carbon goes up in a day. It's going to be a long process, but ultimately a lot of that carbon will end up in the atmosphere.
From hemlocks and ash to chestnut and elm trees, contagious diseases are decimating America's forests. Our guest argues we should reconsider how we travel, ship, and import plants if we expect to keep forests safe and healthy. WPR host Keely Boltina talked about that with independent science journalist Gabriel Popkin in the spring. Here's the rest of their conversation.
My family tries to get out and walk around, and I kid you not, in 2 days, I have had 3 socially distanced conversations with people out in their yards about all of the ash trees that we've had to take down because of the emerald ash borer. I mean, people see this in their communities as well as forests. Is it fair to say that this threat is real for everybody, even if you're living in a fourth-floor apartment in the middle of a city, that we should be worried about these things?
Oh, absolutely. Ash is one of those trees that has been planted throughout American cities because it's a great tree. It's beautiful. Some ash species grow very quickly, provides really nice shade. And I guess probably people like it because it doesn't drop huge nuts or acorns or anything like that. In fact, I lived in Wisconsin about a decade ago, and in the backyard of the house where I lived was a beautiful old white ash tree that provided amazing shade and amazing fall color. You know, I would be afraid to revisit that tree because I imagine it's probably gone by now. Yeah, the emerald ash borer has cost cities billions and billions of dollars in tree removal costs. Ash trees are also very important ecologically. And one thing about ash is that there are many species of it in North America, and they each sort of specialize in different environments. Green ash is a real wetland tree. It loves to be near water, and it grows a lot in streams and wetlands. And so when those trees die, those streams and rivers, wetlands, are much less protected from nutrients coming in, say, from nearby farm fields. And it really can change the entire ecosystem. That's also true for black ash, which grows kind of farther north, like in northern Wisconsin and Minnesota. On the other hand, white ash is more of an upland tree, and you might find that in the mountains and as an important part of those forests. And as you mentioned, in cities, both green and white ash have been planted a lot. And yeah, that's definitely going to take cities a while to recover from the emerald ash borer.
We planted a lot of them. Are these ash trees that are under attack native to Wisconsin, or is this an example of that tree trade that you talked about that went wrong?
No, they're native trees. We have, I believe, 16 native species of ash tree in the United States, and all 16 are believed to be vulnerable to the emerald ash borer.
And there's an additional cultural aspect to this when it comes to tribes in Wisconsin.
That's right. Tribes in Wisconsin and throughout the Midwest own pretty sizable chunks of forest, and these forests often have ash trees. And there's a traditional use of ash trees for really making a lot of different kinds of crafts, but the one that I think people that is best known is basket making. The black ash has these, the bark sort of comes in strips, and it's quite easy to separate the strips from one another. I actually saw this done a couple of years ago. And you can, in a day, you can cut down a tree, separate the bark into strips, and have a basket. And this was a very important kind of traditional use of ash. It almost died out from the Midwest, but it's actually being revived. There's some great basket makers, one in particular who I met on the Bad River Reservation in northern Wisconsin. And she tells me that so far she hasn't seen the ash borer where she lives, but she's very worried about it. And in fact, is already sort of making plans to figure out how to keep her basket making business. I mean, it's a real money making business going after emerald ash borer comes through.
Gabriel Popkin wrote an opinion piece in the New York Times arguing that the United States is not prepared for diseases and invasive insects poised to decimate our forests. You're listening to the Ideas Network. And even beyond basket making, I mean, this isn't just an ethical conundrum or an environmental conversation. Invasive species and diseases, they threaten people's livelihoods, their money.
That's right. There was a recent study that came out that put the cost of all invasive species globally at over $1 trillion. Now, this is over several decades, but anytime you're talking about $1 trillion, that's, you know, that's big money. These things are definitely taking a chunk out of the global economy. There's no question about that.
We've talked about the fact that transporting plants can be a problem because it spreads invasive species, but they can also like hitch a ride on packing material and get from overseas to here and then attack.
Exactly. And that's actually what happened with the emerald ash borer. It's thought to have come in on wood pallets. You know, I'm sure everyone's seen goods shipped on wood pallets. This is a very common way to pack goods onto these large container ships. The emerald ash borer first showed up in the Detroit suburbs. Detroit obviously has a port, and the thinking is that it just hitched a ride on some wood packing material. Nobody even thought about this potential problem. And then by the time the ash borer was discovered, it was already way too late. It was widespread in the environment. Some of the earlier plagues came, like chestnut blight and hemlock woolly adelgid, came in on live plants. And so the USDA recognized that and really ratcheted down on the kinds of plants that could be imported. And I think it's been a while since a major new plague was imported on live plants, not to say it couldn't still happen. But it turns out when you sort of close one pathway, then often another pathway opens up. And so this pathway for insects to come in on wood that hasn't been properly treated has been a big one. Here in the East Coast, there's also this new thing, the spotted lanternfly. People think that came in on landscaping stone. So some landscaping company imported some stone from another country, and just, you know, this weird insect that nobody had ever thought about just hitched a ride. So that's a kind of a newer area of concern. And, you know, it's not the only one.
This is where you draw another parallel between trees and people in this pandemic, because we knew that something could come. Experts have shouted that the world was not ready for a pandemic, even though it was a real possibility. You say that translates to the situation with our woodlands.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a group of environmentalists, advocates who've been for quite a while sort of calling on the government to do more to prevent the introduction of these forest pests. And obviously they're competing with a lot of people who want the government to do more of a lot of different things. But, you know, I think they have kind of a strong argument that every day thousands, if not millions, of containers enter the U.S. Carrying all kinds of goods, and only a small fraction of these are inspected. Now, I do think it's important to give credit. Government agencies have gotten a lot smarter about how they do this. They sort of have this risk rubric where they can kind of make decisions about which containers to inspect. And they've gotten stricter when they do find a forest pest, let's say on a improperly treated wood pallet, they punish the company. So that didn't used to be the case. Things have gotten better, but you know, the folks I talk to are still concerned that there are many ways that new forest pests could enter the country.
Solving deforestation or preventing plagues in trees feels like a really big burden, something that somebody who has a lot of power has to handle. Are there things that we can do as individuals to stop this from happening?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I've sort of been discussing, a lot of the forest plagues that we've seen have come in on plants from overseas. And there's always been this idea in landscaping that, you know, our native plants here in North America are not good enough. We need to bring in stuff from elsewhere. And lately, there's been more of a movement toward using native plants. And there's many reasons to use native plants. But in my opinion, one of the big ones is they're not going to bring in a new insect or disease, because they've been here essentially forever. And the insects and diseases that feed on them are well adapted. They're well adapted to kind of coexist together. So choose native plants over imported plants when you're doing your landscaping. And the other thing I would note is that it's become really popular to import kind of exotic plants as houseplants. I think this is kind of a big hot new trend right now. And that's not necessarily a very well-regulated industry. You can go online and, you know, click a button and order all kinds of weird plants, as one expert put it to me, and just have them shipped to you. You know, think carefully about where these plants are coming from, if they may pose a risk to plants here, and if you really need them. Or maybe, you know, think about buying instead a native plant from your local garden center. And just one more potential route of introduction is in airplane luggage. People go overseas and see something you like and you want to bring it home. Well, maybe think twice about doing that, because you don't know what else could be hitchhiking on that plant that you love so much.
How concerned are you about the future of our forests?
Well, I worry a lot, because, you know, it looks like our forests are full of trees, and they are, but in a place like Wisconsin, there are not that many different types of trees or genuses, as biologists would put it. The forests are really kind of dominated by a few big genuses like oak, maple, obviously. We mentioned the hemlock and the ash, and there's a handful of others. And each of these pests seems to specialize on a particular genus. So if you lose the hemlock and the ash, and if you could imagine a few more pests coming in that might take out maple and oak, you wouldn't actually have a whole lot left. So I am quite worried about this.
Gabriel, thank you for talking with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
That was Gabriel Popkin. He spoke with WPR host Keely Boltina. Popkin is an independent journalist. He writes about science and the environment. He also spent some time at UW-Madison. Popkin's recent piece in the New York Times is called Invasive Insects and Diseases Are Killing Our Forests. You can read it for yourself. We've set up a link online at wpr.org/centraltime.